Over the last couple years, youth workers have been forced into change due to the pandemic. We were moved into situations where we had to be innovators. How do we utilize those experiences to continue this mode of being change makers? This is the University of Minnesota Extension Center for Youth Development podcast series. I'm Carrie Robidoux, an extension educator. Joining me to address this question of how to capture the program innovations that we've experienced over the last couple years and learn how to utilize a model that will help us through these efforts are University of Minnesota Extension colleagues of mine representing a variety of program areas. First of all, we have Becky Meyer, who is in the Center for Youth Development with me. Hello, Becky.
Hello, Carrie.
Nate Meyer is a program leader from the Center for Agriculture, Food, and Natural Resources and Sciences. Thank you for joining today, Nate.
Yeah, this is great.
And Mary Jo Catress, a program leader for the Center for Family Development.
Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you all for being here and part of the podcast. Becky, will you bring us into this work with you? What is the need for the program innovation to continue post-pandemic, and maybe give us a little insight as to why the three of you are working on this effort together.
Sure. Well, thanks again for having us, Carrie. As we know, our community needs are bigger than ever, and there are opportunities for us to identify innovative strategies in helping to address some of those needs. And I think one area that we can focus in on, of course, is how we engage young people as part of the solution to be those change makers. And we can work with them to help them identify ways that they can work to take different innovative leaps. And just based on the work that Nate and Mary Jo and I have been doing for the last few years, we started pre-pandemic, and we know that there has been a lot that we could not predict that we've experienced in the past 2 years. So there's just an opportunity for us to look at some different capacities. And when we can add up those capacities, it's an opportunity for us to move to something different in a way that maybe we hadn't considered before. I just think youth is a really important part of that equation. There's a lot of complex problems that are facing the world outside of the pandemic, right? We have poverty, inequality, environmental issues. And so these wicked problems are going to require all of us to be thinking about different kinds of solutions. And that's going to be across all kinds of sectors. And I think youth should be a part of that. So how do we navigate through those changes and identify ways to bring youth into this conversation?
Thank you, Becky. You know, you mentioned that the three of you have been working on this model before the pandemic. And then when the pandemic occurred, wow, change, innovation. We needed to make left turns when we thought we were going to make a right turn happen really quickly. I'll mention that we did do a podcast called Innovative Youth Programs back in episode 38, where you started to discuss the idea of innovative programs. And I do appreciate Nate and Mary Jo joining us today to continue this conversation. And I think launch us forward post-pandemic and in how do we utilize everything that we've learned and to keep us moving forward with these efforts. So Nate, how do we make that shift now from going back to how we've always done things and keep moving us forward with this with the innovative programs that we've created, the new changes that we've made? How do we know what to keep? And how do we know when we should keep that innovation and change moving forward?
That's a great question, Carrie. I think it really starts by embracing the opportunity to hold on to some of the things that we've learned along the way and really embracing the need to do things differently. At the same time that we don't necessarily want to go back to doing things the way they've always been done, I think it's safe to say our youth audiences, our youth program professionals, our families, everyone we work and live with doesn't want to go back to doing things the same way as well. So we have to move forward. We have to move into a new normal, even though part of what Becky and Mary Jo and I have talked about for years is that we don't know what the new normal is. We have to take intentional steps to get there. And for us, that has always involved three fundamental orientations that are really important to doing good innovative work. The first is really practicing empathy. The number one thing is to take an opportunity to get to know the folks who you're working with well, whether that's youth or whether it's adults. Understand their different perspectives, their worldviews, what they're dealing with as much as you can. Interview them, observe them, try to stand in their shoes and really get to know them deeply. Then we talk about practicing a creative process of innovation that Becky talked about a little bit in her podcast, and we'll talk about more, I'm sure, today. And finally, ultimately, what we're always doing is striving for elegance. And the way that we talk about that is to think about your favorite app that's on your computer or your phone. It's probably an app that does something that is really difficult for you to do in a normal way. For me, I hate to say it, but I love like airline apps because I hate buying plane tickets and researching them. The really arduous process of checking in to get my tickets. The app makes it so easy. It tells me it's time. It gives me the plane flights. It gives me a digital ticket. It makes doing something hard really easy. And that's how we think of elegance. How can we recraft our lives to make doing the hard things really easy? And that can help us step forward to that new normal.
You know, as Nate was talking about the cell phone and the app, you know, one of the things that I think about is just the importance of practicing empathy with youth in our youth programs and helping young people to really understand, like, what are those issues or challenges or problems that are happening in their communities? And what are some of the potential solutions and how might they play a role in those solutions? And so when I think about practicing empathy with young people, I think it's really important for us to try to see a situation from outside of our own perspective and to try to relate. And so as Nate was talking about that example with the cell phone app, there were a couple of things that he mentioned. You know, like he mentioned that this app, it made it a meaningful experience for him, right? To be able to like change his ticket. So there's the context of like, why is it needed? You know, how does it improve what he's trying to do? You know, they're probably in an airport and trying to figure out how to change their ticket and thought, hey, I wonder if we create an app, would that somehow ease that frustration someone might feel when they need to change their ticket? And so I think when you're thinking about how to practice empathy with young people, I think it has to be something that's contextually meaningful for them. So having them understand why is it so important for them to try to see outside themselves and understand a potential issue from not just their own perspective, but from someone else's perspective and also from the community's perspective. And then think about potential solutions. Now, is that a solution that's going to benefit me? Is that a solution that's going to benefit you? Will that benefit the entire community? And really looking for more win-win type solutions if we can do that. There are ways that we can practice empathy. I, you know, recently came across an excellent example of two art teachers out in the Northwest in California, and they created an art project with their youth. And it was really about, you know, there's a lot of resilience that young people are experiencing as a result of the pandemic. They asked young people, what do you think would bring someone joy? And so they identified some different responses and they turned it into a hotline. And I just think that's a really great example of teachers, caring adults, identifying a way to create empathy with their students and thinking about what's needed right now. Finding joy, what would bring you joy? And those young people identified what would bring them joy or what they thought other people would need for joy. And then they put it together. And then not only did they put it together, but they put it out to the world. And they didn't intend for it to go to the world, but it's really caught on. So I think that's just one example where empathy really had a strong role in that particular project with young people.
The pep talk is a great example of how we believe that innovation works. Oftentimes people think of an innovation as a thing. It's a new idea. It's a new app. But we define innovation as the process of creating those ideas and things. We talk about it as applied creativity. And really for us, innovation happens when you sit down at your desk, at your table, at your computer, and you get to work. And you're going to do one of three things. You're going to either be a designer. You're going to be sort of thinking creatively about what could we as a group of art students do to bring people joy. And you try to think outside the box, or you actually try to build the things that you envision. So you construct, you build the ideas, or you evaluate. How did it work? How did it go? And innovation happens when there are tensions between those things. So we come up with the most brilliant design for pep talk, but we figure out that it's going to cost $1 million to do that. And we only have $50,000. Well, what can we do for $50,000? What can we build that is like our design? Or, you know, maybe in a youth program right now, you're finding that youth no longer want to get together 2 evenings a week like they did before the pandemic. So that's evaluation data. It's telling you that this thing, this design that we used to have, doesn't work anymore. So you go back to the drawing board. How can we keep congregating those youth in a different way? Sometimes it requires a really radical leap. The pandemic forced us all into really radical leaps. Within 24, 48, 36 hours, we couldn't leave our houses. There wasn't a lot of time for redesign and all this. We just had to build something to continue working that we probably never could have envisioned. That was just a really radical leap. Sometimes and more often, we take what we call steps to the adjacent possible. So you just sort of take a little step in the right direction, get a little stronger, and then you collect some data, you design, you build something new, and you take another step to even stronger. But it's really, for us, innovation comes through the process of being a designer, a creator or builder, and an evaluator. And you can be those people in any order. It can start in any place, but you just have to be iterative as you go along.
Mary Jo, when youth programs are ready to take this leap into program innovations, when organizations are finding factors that are prompting them to move, to reinforce, to sustain their practices, how do they do that? What is the research that is supporting this?
Yeah, good question, Carrie. Thank you. Pre-pandemic, Nate and Becky and I engaged in some research nationally with some of our colleagues that are known to be innovators in their fields, at their universities, and in their programs. And we really wanted to know, what it does it take to take that leap into a more innovative practice? And we can all kind of probably laugh a little bit about what innovation meant pre-pandemic, right? Now that we are navigating this pandemic and we're often asked to innovate, like Nate referenced, on the fly in a sense, because we're just not sure how something's going to work, when we're going to be able to do it, and how it's going to be perceived by our communities as we're, you know, continuously changing throughout the pandemic. And so we, pre-pandemic, we did a survey and we asked, like I said, innovators across the nation 4 different questions. How have you experienced innovation in your work? What helped you make the leap? So just like you asked, Carrie, how did it feel? And then what were some of the challenges that they faced in this innovation? And then we also collected and did some data collection via a panel presentation and a webinar that we did, as well as asked some colleagues within our own university here at University of Minnesota how they took the leap in their work. And Becky explained a lot of that research in that model in episode 38, Innovation for Youth Programming, and kind of took a deeper dive into that. So that's one space that folks could listen to and learn more. But one of the things when we think about institution support, what does it look like from my own program, my own department, and how to take that leap? And there was a sense of permission that was needed to take that innovation. And I think now that we're past pandemic world, that permission has lifted a little bit because we're forced to just try things. I mean, I know for my own team at the beginning of when we had to stay at home and we were, you know, working at home all of a sudden, right? Away from our offices, away from interaction with our colleagues, and more importantly, interaction within our communities. So with our youth and with our families, as a program leader, my advice to my team was just go and do and try. That's what they did. And we, and I know I can speak across all of Extension, we came up with some really cool programs and they are really meaningful. Like we've talked about here today, very meaningful and really trying to understand where the community is at. And making sure that we're letting community lead. And with that means letting youth lead. And so letting ideas kind of expand and grow in ways that we probably never thought were possible before. So I think that that is one of the things that our institutions have allowed us to do. And then we can draw on different resources and different expertise more than ever. Our work is embedded in the community. It is driven by the community. But more and more that lived experience of our community members is the expertise that lies within our work. And so that also lies within our youth, like Becky said, to listen and to learn and to kind of step back and even walk alongside, so to speak, youth in letting them innovate and really figure out what is meaningful to them in the work that needs to be done with them and for them so that they can grow and develop in ways that we need them to do in order to support their own learning and their communities.
I do think that with innovation, sometimes it seems that those unexpected disruptions can really propel us to think differently. And so it's how do we utilize that opportunity to consider alternative solutions for what maybe had not been a consideration before. Additionally, like when Mary Jo was talking, you know, one of the things that we identified in our research was just this idea that innovation is messy work and it takes a lot of perseverance and determination to sort of work through those different capacities that we identified. So sometimes in the model, you might have really great institutional support and maybe have really strong individual capacity for something, but your team is not really at the table with you yet. And so there are ways that you can focus on, you know, changing those dynamics in order to create the optimum opportunities to consider an alternative solution. And I think the same thing is true with youth, that it's important for us to, when we're working with young people, to identify that they may have come and identified some potential solutions, but there may be reasons why that solution is not a feasible solution and it might push them to think in different ways. And there's a need to help them understand that it's really important to sort of stay invested in that if it's really an important issue in your community that you want to see a change around, and not to necessarily like attempt a solution and have it fail and then say, it's not going to work. No, that solution didn't work, but there must be other solutions. And it might require additional expertise and resources that weren't brought in the first time, but helping to set a supportive environment for them to explore those other opportunities to move through and be really committed to that particular challenge that they've identified. An important dimension of this is creating those conditions within community, however it's defined for those youth and other audiences. What is the meaningful community? And it might be in school, it might be more broadly, you know, in another community context. And I think, how do we do that when we think about our youth programs? How do we make sure to identify a meaningful context for those young people we're working with to bring about some of those changes in community? And, you know, one place I think we can start is, you know, Nate, Mary Jo, and I, from our model, we put together a tool to assess those factors. So we talked about the approach, we talked about individual characteristics, those team characteristics. We talked about, you know, the stakeholder support. So we have a tool that we have put together to try and initially assess. And I think that's something that professionals, educators could use with young people and could try to identify places where there could be some improvement to help perhaps create conditions for that innovative leap, whether it's in, you know, a solution that they're trying to identify with a community change, or whether it's just, you know, some kind of leap within the conditions for that learning environment from a professional youth worker perspective. It may be that something isn't working, but maybe it's because they don't have the investment in the particular factor that's going to enable that change to happen. And another piece, I know we referenced, like, the pandemic's kind of been a radical shift for all of us, right? And when we talk about innovations, we know that they're not necessarily like huge leaps of change that are happening. It's tiny steps of change that over the course of time will really create something different. And so it might be something that's more radical, but in our work, working with other educators and professionals, we found that those leaps aren't, they're not huge. Like they're just like thinking about something differently and putting it into practice and you get a different result. And I think that's what we're really striving for, is how to create conditions for young people in their learning that's meaningful for them, that will engage them to work on some of those community issues and create a change and become those change makers and innovators of the future.
And I can point out that we have a website, z.umn.edu/program innovation, all one word. And we try to stick everything there that we come up with over the years, all of the articles that we've written and published about program innovation, some of the different planning tools that we use, and as Becky pointed out, our diagnostic instruments that can help you either as a team of youth program specialists sit down and sort of take stock of where are we strong and where might we be able to improve in some of the factors that enable making that innovative leap. We also have it developed in a way that you could use it with a group of youth and just have those youth do a diagnostic and sort of figure out where can we build our strength in order to make change and tackle really wicked problems. And so we hope you'll visit the site and be able to use some of those tools.
Thank you for sharing those resources, Nate. And what a pleasure it has been to discuss program innovation with the three of you. I know your work started pre-pandemic, but it has been refreshing to consider how the work we've done over the past couple of years can be seen in a positive light. The link that Nate just shared, as well as the podcast Becky and I did a couple years ago on program innovation, will be in the description. And I know these three would enjoy an email from you if you'd like to discuss this topic further or if you have any questions for them at all.
Thanks, Carrie.
Thank you, Carrie.
It's been a pleasure to be here with you.
As we end this podcast, I encourage you to go to our website at www.extension.umn.edu/youth. where you will find resources and information about upcoming training, as well as resources that we have on topics on youth development. You can also learn about our Minnesota 4-H program if you aren't already involved. Thanks again for joining this podcast today. This is Carrie Robidoux from the University of Minnesota Extension Center for Youth Development. Please tune in again soon.